Hello and welcome to episode 38. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. A big thanks to those members who hosted in one of the recent rural and regional forums. In particular, thank you to Wonthaggi, Colac, Swan Hill, Mansfield and Ararat for hosting. We look forward to doing that again in March and September of next year. And thank you to those members who have already volunteered to host one of those regional forums. Starting with our industrial roundup and in particular with community health, we're scheduled to meet this week again with VAHPA with regards to a new agreement for our allied health professionals. Just a reminder that that's a process that is now being overseen by the Fair Work Commission. With respect to our health service members, we also have the AMA bargaining occurring twice per week, but we also have a looming date where the AMA are reporting back to their members on the 19th of October. And there is a significant impetus for the parties to make as much progress with regards to those negotiations before the 19th of October. We're also meeting fortnightly with our reference group, but all those bargaining meetings and those reference group meetings are being subject to summaries that will be posted on the VHAA community app. With respect to the general dentist, the specialist dentist bargaining, and the bargaining for dental therapists, hygienists, and oral health therapists, the VHAA has met with representatives for the CPSU on the 2nd of October to progress the bargaining for both general dentists and specialist dentists, as well as the dental therapists agreement. And on the 3rd of October, we held a reference group meeting. Updates for those meetings will also be posted on the app. And just a reminder to all members about the upcoming AGM meeting for VHAA on the 13th of October. Friday the 13th, an incredibly easy date to remember. All members are welcome to attend at 10:30 a.m. for that AGM. But as always, all our activities are being summarised on the VHAA community app. That's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. Joining me for this week's discussion is the Manager of Workplace Relations Services and the official team mascot for the Richmond Football Club, Tim Nagle. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, Stuart. Good to be here.
Tim, would you do the honours and reveal the clue which will suggest the subject matter for today's discussion? So, for the benefit of those people who are listening to this podcast rather than watching, could you describe the clue?
It's a Kiss album.
That's correct, Tim. And on the basis of that clue, what would you say that the subject matter for today's discussion will be?
I'm not sure.
Get out. And joining me for this week's discussion is Senior Workplace Relations Consultant Daniel Pullen. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you, Stuart.
Daniel, I can see that you're holding an album by the band Kiss. On the basis of that particular clue, what would you say that the subject for this week's discussion is?
It would have to be makeup pay.
High five. Thanks, Daniel. Today's subject matter is indeed accident makeup pay, or accident pay as it's more commonly known. It's a term that's found in all our agreements.
And what happened to Tim?
Daniel, you were my first choice, but Tim has had an accident. So for the purposes of today, it might be worthwhile for us just to identify the particular clauses that people should be aware of and where to find those clauses within the agreements. So in terms of the Health and Allied Managers and Administrative Workers Agreement, in Section 2, you're looking at Clause 28. In Section 3, you're looking at Clause 27. For the Nurses Agreement, you're looking at Clause 27. For the Allied Health Professionals, it's Clause 32. And in the proposed new Medical Scientists Agreement, it's Clause 82, but just for sake of reference, in the expired agreement, it was Clause 73. And in the Mental Health Agreement, it's Clause 27.
And is it always called accident pay?
No, it isn't. And that's one of the things that makes it tricky. So it's given a number of different titles. And sometimes it's referred to as accident pay. Sometimes it's referred to as makeup pay. Sometimes those two ideas come together and it's referred to as accident makeup pay. But whenever you see those terms utilised, we're talking about the same thing.
And when does accident pay apply?
So it applies when someone is either injured or ill and in receipt of workers' compensation payments. So it's very much connected to workers' compensation.
So in the context of workers' compensation, What is accident pay?
Put simply, it's the difference between the compensation that the employer is receiving and what the employee would have been paid that week if they'd been performing their normal duties.
So people on workers' compensation would receive less pay than if they were at work?
That's right. So workers' compensation is calculated as a percentage of the pre-injury average weekly earnings.
And what are the pre-injury average weekly earnings?
So pre-injury average weekly earnings, or PAWE if you prefer, which does sound kind of like a Spanish panda, it's exactly as it sounds. Effectively what it is, it's the employee's average weekly earnings for the 52 weeks before the injury.
And in circumstances where an employee has been employed for less than 52 weeks, how's the PAWE calculated?
Yeah, under those circumstances, the average is calculated over the period for which they've been employed.
Right. And what's the PAWE made up of?
So it's got a number of different components. It's the ordinary earnings for the ordinary hours for the normal number of hours in a week, and that includes the base rate of pay, can include overtime, as well as shift allowance, piece rates, commissions, and the monetary value of certain non-pecuniary items.
So what does the monetary value of certain non-pecuniary benefits mean?
The best example I can give would be salary packaging. That is where monies are directed somewhere other than the employee themselves.
And how are these compensation payments calculated?
Yeah, I mentioned before that it's a percentage. So the percentage is 95% of PAWE in the first 13 weeks, and after that period of time, it drops to 80% for the period of 14 through to 130 weeks.
And in terms of accident pay, do the same principles apply?
No, they don't. And that's the thing that people need to be mindful of. So compensation is calculated as a percentage of the pre-injury average weekly earnings, which includes not only the base rate of pay, but those other things that we discussed, including potentially overtime and penalties. But determining accident makeup pay involves a different calculation based on a different figure.
And what would be the approach?
So accident pay is calculated as the difference between the compensation payment and the total weekly wage rate, as varied from time to time, being paid at the date of the time that of the injury, which would have been payable if the person had been performing their normal duties. But the calculation of the total weekly rate has some fairly significant exclusions in most of the agreements.
And what would be these exclusions?
So the exclusions that are common include overtime, shift premiums, penalty rates, and any ancillary payment.
So that's likely to be a lower figure than the PAWE.
That's exactly right. So you get compensation based on a higher rate, and then the makeup pay is the difference between the compensation and a lower rate, which excludes a lot of the things that are in that PAWE calculation, particularly things like shift penalties.
And what would be the practical impact of that?
The practical impact is that in some instances, no accident pay may be payable. That is 95% of the pre-injury average weekly earnings, which includes things such as shift penalties, may in fact be a higher rate than the comparison rate that excludes shift penalties.
And what would be the exceptions to this?
So there's one notable exception that people need to be aware of. Mostly the accident pay clauses are quite similar, but the Allied Health Professionals one is a little bit different. The Allied Health Professionals Agreement describes accident pay as being the difference between the compensation and the earnings that they would ordinarily receive. The agreement for Allied Health Professionals does not refer to the exclusions for overtime and shift penalties the way that all the other agreements do.
And why is that?
I suspect it's largely historical, but what I do note is that the clause changed through the 2009 arbitration process, and that may well account for the difference.
So does accident pay only apply in the event of total incapacity, or does it apply in partial incapacity circumstances as well?
So it applies to both. In the event of a partial incapacity, you take the compensation paid together with the average weekly amount they're earning before comparing with the total wage rate.
And does it have to be for a whole week?
No, it can be for part of a week, calculated on a pro rata basis.
Do employers have to declare pre-existing injuries?
A slightly different approach is taken in terms of the clauses. It's a common feature for people to declare pre-existing injuries. Most of our agreements, with the exception of the Allied Health Professionals Agreement, actually requires that people declare workers' compensation claims that they've made within a period of time. I think it's within 5 years. And the failure to make a declaration with regards to those workers' compensation claims could have a significant effect.
Okay. Are all employees receiving compensation entitled to accident pay?
Not quite. There are some rules around who is entitled to accident maker pay. And in effect, they're rules that determine whether somebody is eligible to receive that payment. They're described generally under our agreements along the lines of qualifications for payment. And you'll see that there's a list of qualifications for payment. Again, it's described somewhat differently in the Allied Health Professionals Agreement as an employer is not obliged to pay accident make-up pay. That's the heading in that instance.
And that would be a good summary of those rules that apply?
Yeah, so the kind of things that come up are, for example, there's an exclusion for accident make-up pay during the first 2 weeks of employment. Leaving aside for a moment how incredibly unlucky you would have to be injured in the first 2 weeks of your employment, there is no accident pay benefit for the first 2 weeks on the job.
Right. So what does that mean?
Well, it means that there is basically a qualifying period. Mm. But the other exclusions that exist include it only applies whilst you're employed by the employer. And what that means is that if somebody resigns their employment, then their entitlement to accident make-up pay would normally cease.
Right. So what's the is there any exceptions in these scenarios?
Yeah, there is. If somebody's partially incapacitated, but they can only find employment with another employer, then they may still be entitled to accident make-up pay.
Okay. What happens if an employer terminates the employee's employment?
Yeah, look, that is something that should be an extraordinarily rare circumstance. But the provisions do deal with it. And what it talks about is that you continue to be entitled unless you are terminated for serious and willful misconduct, which should be, as I said, a very rare circumstance. Again, here's a point of difference in the sense that the Allied Health Professionals Agreement doesn't have that provision in it.
Would there be any other qualifications or other interesting points that our members should be aware of?
Yeah, there are. So accident make-up pay doesn't apply for the first 5 normal working days, is the expression found in the agreements. Through the first 5 normal working days of incapacity, there's also a qualification with respect to industrial diseases.
Okay, so what would be an industrial disease?
An industrial disease is one that's contracted in the course of employment. Perhaps the most likely example of that would be somebody who contracts asbestosis as a result of exposure to asbestos during the course of employment.
So we spoke about earlier about a requirement to declare pre-injury duties. What impact does that have on accident pay?
Yeah, so just in terms of a declaration of pre-existing injuries. We talked before that the agreement imposes a requirement on employees to declare claims. But outside of the agreements, there's also the framework of the workers' compensation legislation itself. And what that does in Victoria is that it imposes an obligation to declare pre-existing injuries in certain circumstances. Specifically, if you fail to declare pre-existing injuries or diseases of which the employee was aware, can affect whether the person is entitled to workers' compensation.
Right. So that would have quite a drastic impact on the accident pay that employee would receive.
Yeah, so the way that applies is that if an employee was aware before starting the job that they had a pre-existing injury or disease and they knew about that particular injury or disease, the employer had advised the worker of that requirement to make that declaration, the nature of the proposed employment, and they were advised to disclose the pre-existing injuries or diseases they know of that may be affected by the proposed employment, and then any recurrence or aggravation or acceleration or exacerbation or deterioration of that illness or injury. Under those circumstances, you may not be entitled to compensation under those circumstances. True also if you make a false or misleading statement.
So what impact does this have on accident pay?
A significant one. So if you're not entitled to workers' compensation payments, you're not entitled to accident pay.
Okay. So one follows the other.
Yeah, look, and it's worth noting that some of our agreements, again with the exception of the Allied Health Professionals Agreement, refer to that requirement to declare all the compensation claims that you've made in the previous 5 years. And in that circumstance, if you fail to declare those claims, you may forfeit your entitlement to accident makeup pay.
Okay. So the accident pay is payable for the entire period that compensation is provided?
No, it's not. So it's capped. And the cap is the same under our agreements. It's 39 weeks. That can be 39 weeks in a row, or it can be an aggregate.
And what is meant by an aggregate?
So not a single period, but a collection. It may well be that a particular injury that a person is away for a period, but then they return for a period, but there is some further problem and there's another period. So it can be a collection of absences arising from a particular injury or a particular claim.
Okay.
So just in terms of that cap of 39 weeks, there is something that is worth emphasising, and it's a feature of a lot of our agreements. These clauses are quite historical and do need some review, which is something that we'll be doing during the review process as we move forward. But you'll see that there are two periods for accident make-up pay. If I take the Health and Allied Services Agreement, for example, it talks about a 26-week cap if that applies to an injury that it was incurred before the 1st of January 1981.
I've read about that year in books and such.
Yes, 1981 was a long period of time ago, and perhaps the best way to put that into context is simply to say, "Shut up your face."
Pardon?
"Shut Up Your Face" by Joe Dolce was the number one record in January 1981. That puts it in context as to just how long ago that is. I think it's fair to say that those dates have served their purpose. I don't think we're going to have any claims relating to injuries incurred before January 1981 at this point.
So what happens if an employee takes annual leave?
So if an employee takes annual leave or any other kind of leave, then the process for accident make-up pay ceases. So there's no payment of accident pay during that time.
And are there any other requirements under the accident pay clause?
Yeah, there are. And it's interesting that there are a feature of this clause. For example, one of the requirements is for the employee to notify the employer in writing as soon as practicable with respect to any injury that might be compensable.
Right. So what if, because of the injury, they can't give that notice?
So the notice can be given by a representative.
Okay. But what happens if they don't?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. So there is an absolute obligation imposed by the agreements to give that, to advise the employer in writing with respect to that event and that injury. But it doesn't specify what happens if you fail to do it. So it doesn't say that you will disentitle yourself to accident make-up pay. Presumably it just provides a basis to perhaps have a dispute between the parties if there was some benefit to actually having a dispute and working those matters out.
And what about medical examinations?
Yes, the clause requires that employees must cooperate and participate and undertake medical examinations as required by the workers' compensation legislation. So it doesn't impose its own obligation. It just says that you've got to cooperate in accordance with the workers' compensation legislation.
So when does accident pay stop?
So just on that point, though, and a contrast between the medical examinations provision and the provision of notice in writing that an injury has been incurred. With the medical examinations, it makes it clear that accident make-up pay is contingent on that compliance, which is one of the reasons for making the point that the earlier one doesn't say that in order to be entitled to accident make-up pay, you must provide written notification to your employer as soon as practicable.
Okay. So when does the accident pay stop?
So accident pay will cease when the workers' compensation ceases. And it may also, which will most commonly occur because the injury is resolved and someone is able to return to work, but it would also cease if the employee was to pass away.
Right, and are there any other provisions that members should be aware of?
Yeah, look, with the exception of the AHP, with the Allied Health Professionals Agreement, there's an interesting clause in each of the agreements about variations to the rate in compensation payments.
Okay, and what does that say?
So it's a statement along the lines of any changes in compensation rates under the work cover legislation will not increase the amount of accident pay above the amount that would have been payable had the rates and compensation remain unchanged.
Okay. And what's the issue?
So the issue is that the rate of compensation drops after 13 weeks. And it's been understood by some that this clause means that the amount of accident pay is a fixed dollar amount that does not increase when the rate of compensation decreases. But the counter to that is that a claim that that reference to a variation in compensation rates is actually a reference to a variation to the legislation as opposed to the scheduled decrease in the percentage.
So which of those do you think is correct?
So it's really quite difficult. Legislative changes are such a rare occurrence, and it would strike me as quite strange if it is that these clauses were preparing for a legislative change, because it just hardly ever happens as such. But on the other side of it, it means that the value of accident pay in real terms reduces after the 13-week period.
So when do the accident pay clauses come into effect?
So the interesting thing is that most of the agreements talk about these clauses coming into effect at a certain date. And again, this really reinforces the need to review these provisions in our next round of bargaining. So with the exception of the AHP clause, there's a reference, certainly in the Health and Allied, I think also the nurses, to these coming into effect in March 1975, which is just a couple of years after that KISS album was released.
And what was the number one single in March 1975?
The number one single in March 1975 was by the Carpenters. It was called Please, Mr. Postman.
I've never heard of that song.
I don't think it's one of their best. So just a couple of weeks before that, though, the number one single was Carl Douglas's Kung Fu Fighting. I think that's a much better choice.
I would agree.
I think it fits with the theme of Accident Maker.
I think it does too. So broadly, what would you advise members?
Firstly, to be aware that whilst there is a lot of uniformity across the various agreements with regards to this clause, that they're not identical. And you can't make the assumption that they are identical, particularly in the context of the Allied Health Professionals Agreement.
Okay.
Daniel, thank you very much for joining me for this particular discussion.
Thank you, Stuart.
And thank you, Carl Douglas.
Thank you, Carl Douglas.